Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Tim. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for asking. And Lance, we have a really interesting interview today. It's with an artist, a courtroom artist, and her name is Jane Rosenberg.
That's right. We didn't know about Jane until there was an article written describing a moment in the courtroom trial of Ghislaine Maxwell, where Miss Maxwell had turned and started sketching Jane as Jane was sketching her. And it was such a bizarre moment, such a fascinating article, that we reached out to Jane to find out more about that. And the more we learned about Jane, the more interesting that whole world became. I never personally thought much about it. But if you go to her website, janerosenbergart.com, you'll see where she has her personal paintings. And she's got a bunch of other court art galleries where you can check out various other trials that she's covered. And you'll find that she's covered a lot of these high profile cases like R. Kelly and Mia Farrow and Woody Allen. It's pretty remarkable.
Okay, so I really hope you enjoy this episode. I really think you will. It's an interesting angle, something that happens in crime all the time, and something that we've never really discussed. And Lance, something that we are discussing is CrimeCon 2022 in Las Vegas. We're going, aren't we?
We are going to CrimeCon in Vegas. That is April 29th, 30th, and May 1st. Those are the dates. We will be there, and we're going to bring along a lot of our partners in true crime, and we can't wait to hang out with you all. And if you've been on the fence about whether or not to purchase a standard badge, go to crimecon.com, and you can get 10% off your standard badge with the promo code CRAWLSPACE.
Okay, everybody, thanks a lot. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with Jane Rosenberg.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Welcome to the podcast, Jane Rosenberg. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing great, and we're super excited about this interview. We have been excited about this since the article came out in the Guardian that's just titled My Life is Weird, and you describe a moment in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial where you are sketching, you're a courtroom sketch artist, you are sketching her, looking at you, sketching her, and she's sketching you back, which is...
It's unusual, but it's actually not the first time it's ever happened to me. It did happen right before Ghislaine. There was another trial where the co-defendant was sketching me as well. So I thought maybe something happened during pandemic and I started to look very sketchable or something, because two in a row suddenly. Plus about 35 years ago, Eddie Murphy sketched me. He was a comedian. I think he was like on Saturday Night Live, and there's a trial, something to do with his agent. And he was making fun of me, mocking me, bobbing his head up and down, sketching me, and did a little post-it size sketch and he gave it to me. I have it in my apartment somewhere.
This is amazing. And we really want to get into all of these fascinating stories. But tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. You are an artist and you got involved in courtroom sketching. How did it all begin?
In the crib. My mother said I used to peel crayons all the time, endlessly, hours and hours of peeling crayons. And I think I'm still doing that, only I'm peeling pastel chalks instead of crayons. So it began there. I was always interested in art. I did go to college and majored in art. I was a struggling artist for many years. I couldn't figure out what to do. After college, I went to the Art Students League. I studied portraiture. And then I started doing portraits in Provincetown, Massachusetts, as a matter of fact. And I did that for many summers. And then in the winters, I'd go to the Art Students League. And I just needed to break that and figure out a way to stay put. So I didn't want to keep living like a gypsy, going back and forth. I did all kinds of things. I drew on the sidewalk with chalks. I did copies of Rembrandt and Vermeer on the sidewalk with a hat out. And I just couldn't figure out what I was going to do to make a living. So then I went to a lecture at the Society of Illustrators by another courtroom artist. And I decided I want to do this. I'm going after it. I took a look in the mirror and I said, this is what I want. I don't know if I'm good enough. I was terrified, but I was going after it. And I started going to night court with friends of mine who were lawyers. And they, in those days, this is 1980 when I began, there were a lot of prostitutes being arraigned in night court at 100 Center Street. And I did sketching and I was putting together a portfolio. And I asked the court officers, where do the artists sit when they come? What do they bring? I had a million questions for them. They said, oh, come next week. We'll let you sit in the jury box with the other artists. It's a high profile case. So I went to court that day and sat. There were two other artists. One had Fox on his portfolio and I didn't know who the other one was. And I did my sketch and I came home and I just decided I have to try to sell it. I called the startup company back then, which was CNN. They were just a startup company. And they said, oh, we had an artist there. So I thought, oh, now I have to call one of the big three. And I called NBC. They said, come in, show us what you've got. And I did that. They used it, put it on TV. I went home and watched it on my little black and white TV, called my parents and said, I'm on TV. I was very excited. So that's how it all began, being a courtroom artist.
That's fascinating. I didn't even know I was so fascinated by this until I read the article and then looked at your website, which is yourname.com, followed by art, sorry, janerosenbergart.com. I didn't realize how fascinating the world of the courtroom sketch artist is. Are you just sometimes sitting there sketching Woody Allen and thinking to yourself, I'm sketching Woody Allen?
When I was sketching Woody Allen, I was thinking, I can't believe I'm sketching Woody Allen. And actually, when I first felt that was when I sketched Mick Jagger. This is like early on in my career, and maybe it was 1984 or something, 83 or 4, really early on. And I was so starstruck. He walked in the courtroom and, oh, there's Mick Jagger. It was a big deal for me. It was just a little thing with, he also had some issue with an agent or something like that, royalties. But yes, in the early days, I was starstruck, and I don't think I have that anymore, but that was the early days, yeah.
And you mentioned that you peeled crayons as a kid, and there's a little bit about your process in the article from The Independent. Tell us a little bit about your process and what you use to do your sketches.
I don't use crayons anymore. I use pastels on Canson Mi-Tint pastel paper. It's a French kind of archival pastel paper. It's about 20 by 24, a little bit off that. And sometimes I'm very far back. So I have a pair of binoculars and I have prescription lenses on my binoculars so I can wear them wrapped around my head and see far away. I draw first probably in a pastel pencil and then I use ink, a Mont Blanc pen, which is in the fountain pen hospital right now because it broke. And then I use pastels, which I have a lot of, about, you know, I dig in a box of that I built 40 years ago, a box of pastels that fits on the bench next to me. I actually now since pandemic ordered a lot more pastels because I had started doing some work on my computer at home and had a lot more space. So I started buying and ordering more colors and I got used to having more. So in pandemic seating in the courtroom, I'm at least 6 feet apart from people. So which gives me more room to bring in more colors. So now I have a box to my right, my old box with the little stubs in it. And then I have some new pastels on my left side, which takes up space. I take up a lot of space. I think people get unhappy with that, but too bad. During pandemic, it's okay. In the old days, I'd be right on top of the artist right next to me. Literally, our pads could overlap. But now I have more space because they don't want everybody right on top of each other with COVID.
Right. And when you're in the courtroom and the moments are happening, how do you choose which ones you end up beginning the sketch on? Because people are talking, they're having, they're gesticulating, they might be going from one topic to the next. And I can't imagine like having to figure out, okay, now I'm committing to this drawing.
It is tricky. Committing to a drawing is not a good word for me because I do sometimes make changes as I go along. And sometimes I have to scrap what I start when somebody may jump up and something else may happen. I have to like forget about that drawing and go start a fresh one. So I can't really commit, but I try to commit. I try to figure out what is important to the story that day. And hopefully I get it right. And something may happen, which may change my mind. That's the way I have to observe that. That's my job, as a journalist.
And sort of something, I guess, bizarre that we touched on earlier happened in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, where you were sketching her, and your artwork is amazing, by the way. Also on your website, I love the paintings around the city. So Ghislaine was staring right at you, sort of connected with you.
Okay, I'll tell you about that day. That actually started. That sketch was done during a pre-trial hearing, which was a couple of weeks before the actual trial began. And in the pre-trial hearing, I was seated in the jury box in a different courtroom. It was this tiny courtroom. It was a wonderful seat. It was a dream come true to get that seat, right? Front view, no computer monitors blocking my view of her. I was maybe like 10 feet away from her and I could see everything. That's a luxury for me as a courtroom artist. I often am seated behind somebody. I'm peeking between heads. All kinds of things can go wrong with my view. My view is important to me. So when I get a good one, I'm so happy. That day, she was brought in an unusual way. Once again, pandemic, and they didn't have the regular courtroom available. And she came in through a different way. They walked her in shackles, which is unusual. They usually take shackles off before bringing a defendant inside of a courtroom. But for some reason, the way it was set up this time, she was brought in. The shackles were taken off. I did a sketch of her in shackles, which was also very exciting, which I was happy to see. It was, wow, look at that. I got to draw that. And then she sat down after the shackles were off and started, she saw I'm right there in front of her. And she saw I'm sketching and she decided to sketch me too. And I wasn't going to let it throw me off. I know now that it went viral because I don't do social media, but other people have told me. And I know a lot of people thought, oh, how creepy, how scary. I mean, have a lot of interpretations. I don't really know why she did it, but I had to focus on what I was doing. I couldn't let that throw me off. I couldn't say, oh, I'm scared. I have to keep going. That's my job. So I did the sketch of her. She was sketching me. And that's how that sketch went that day.
I think from the outsider's point of view, we've read a lot about her and the Epstein trial. And I mean, all of that is just horrific. And to have her persona built up in one's head and then see that sketch of her sketching you was like chilling. And I think it being your job, you're handling it in a professional way. But the second I saw it, I was like, oh, wow. Oh, because she's I've never met her, but everything that's she's involved in is just so, again, horrific to me. Just having someone do that. Ugh.
Well, I think Epstein was a bit even creepier.
Oh, absolutely.
He was horrific. I mean, Ghislaine didn't come off to me when she entered a courtroom. I didn't know all the facts yet. I hadn't heard testimony yet. I mean, this is this woman. She's slightly built. She's not, she's thin, tall, slender, elegant looking. She didn't look like a horror, but I mean, I do know what she was convicted of doing, a horrific acts. And I know, it's still her drawing me did, I was happy to have a connection with her, which by the way, developed after that initial sketching. She must have read some article or something because then she started waving to me and giving me the eyebrow nods. And there was even a day she said a sentence to me and, she said, oh, long day, isn't it? It was, I was happy to have something where she turned to look at me because my job is to see her. And I don't want somebody to plop in their chair and face the front and like a blob. And all I get to see is the back of their head. It's really a great thing as a courtroom artist to get that front view, just like a photographer might shout out somebody's name as they're walking by so they turn for a second. I was getting that, and that's what I needed as a courtroom artist, to see her. And it was great. I got a lot of, she was very animated. She did a lot of kissing of her lawyers. She had a lot of expression going on, even with a mask, which is another issue. I'm drawing only half a face. I only have her eyes and eyebrows and hair, which thankfully she had. It was challenging, and that's what I had to work with, and that's what I did. And I was appreciative to get something with her connected.
And so some of that behavior was kind of, I guess, big, and her sketching you. So that wasn't something that creeped you out. You were just trying to do your job. Looking back, that wasn't an intimidation tactic on her part, probably?
It may have been. I can't get inside her head and know what her motives were. I just don't, I'm not a good mind reader. I don't know what her reasons were. Maybe she just likes art. As a matter of fact, she had twin sisters in the courtroom, and both of them did sketching as well. They always brought a little pad, did tiny little sketches. I actually looked at one. It wasn't that bad. It was a teeny tiny profile of one of the lawyers who was in the well at the moment. And I don't know what was in Glenn's mind. And I'm not that, like, the rest of the world can interpret it how they want, and maybe they're all right, and I don't really know.
And with this being such a high profile case, and you've worked on other high profile cases, do you ever get caught up in the moment of the trial?
All the cases I do are high profile. I have to say that nobody's going to hire me to do a case that's not high profile. And if it wasn't high profile, by the time I'm done with it, it's high profile, because it's going to go out and people are going to read a story and see the picture. So all the cases I do are high profile.
I was just wondering if, while the trial's going on, do you form an opinion on who's on trial? Do you say, if I was on the jury?
Sometimes I do form an opinion. That doesn't mean my opinion is what I'm sketching, because that's not my job. It's not my job to let the audience see what my opinion is. My job is to show what's actually happening in the courtroom at that moment. Never mind my opinion. And I may agree or disagree with what the jury verdict is, but I still have to sketch the way it is. I have to draw the likeness. I have to capture the moments that are happening before me. And I am not there to tell people what my opinion is.
And did you get a look at the sketch she made of you?
No, I never did see it. Although, when I was leaving the courtroom, at the same moment as her lawyer was going out during a break, I did go running after her down the hallway. And I said, So what was that sketch like? And she said, oh, Jane, you know, I can't discuss that with you. That was her lawyer, Bobby Sternheim. So, you know, they can't tell, you know, that's the way that went. I never did see it.
Oh, that's too bad.
That was not the only time she sketched me. You know that during the trial, she swiveled around in her chair and pulled out her pad and started sketching me other times, too.
Just in case she's listening, we would like to put the call out there that she can somehow provide you with a copy, maybe a digital copy of the sketch.
Or maybe provide you with one.
Or us. We'll take that too. So if you're in the courtroom and you're sketching someone like Eddie Murphy, and you said that he sketched you back, are you allowed to crack a smile, or do you have to stay like stoic?
If I'm able to crack a smile, I do. You know, if I'm busy working and so intently, I'm focused so intensely that there's nothing showing on my face. But there are moments there are jokes in court. I'll laugh at those, but I may be working and nobody knows I'm not like laughing with, you know, my mouth open and like everybody could see me. I'm drawing. So
you're so professional.
I clearly don't spend a lot of time in court.
Yeah. I feel like you're rubbing it in how professional you are. You say, look at how professional I am and how unprofessional you guys are.
That's not what I'm trying to do. It's just, this is my job and I'm explaining how it goes. And
I know, I'm just kidding.
And I am intense when I work. My husband has made jokes about how nobody can interrupt. Not now. It's like, don't talk to me when I'm working. I'm very intense. It's just focus. That's how I have to do it. It's a hard job, really hard job. I have to focus intensely.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch unsolved mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered. Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary and the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune into Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are.
Rex Sherman is a demon that walks among us, a predator that ruined families.
The LISK, Long Island Serial Killer Podcast, was shocked when the news broke of Rex Huerman's arrest. After more than a decade of searching, law enforcement officials had finally pieced together enough evidence to bring formal charges against Rex Huerman. Initially charged with three murders, Huerman is now officially charged with all four deaths in the Gilgo 4 case. I'm your host, Chris Moss, and the LISK podcast will be releasing new episodes with interviews and fresh insight on the case as Rex Huerman awaits trial in Long Island. While we are relieved by the arrest, the LISK podcast team will be working hard to share new developments and perspectives as we get them. So please keep your eyes and ears out for new episodes, and if you haven't already, please listen to seasons 1 and 2 of LISK, Long Island Serial Killer, wherever you listen to podcasts.
How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, but wait, there's more to the story. And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hairs from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program.
Yeah, and you don't even know when you're really working because they can call you in at any time. During this interview, they could call you in, right?
Thankfully, today I scheduled is a holiday and the courts are closed. That's why I was able to do this today, because I am on call for breaking news and I can be called any moment to go. I have my kit, my pastels, my portfolio, my luggage cart all sitting by my door, ready to go out the door. Every night when I come home, I sharpen my pencils, put fresh paper in, and set the whole thing up so I'm ready to go the next morning if I get called, or I may know I have to go the next morning. I'm always ready to go. It's the way it has to be.
Again, I never thought I would be fascinated by this. I love the fact that this profession exists and you have a go bag for when you just need to go. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, and sometimes now, I'm back working remotely, it seems, because of Omicron COVID. And it seems like they've started doing more remote proceedings. So now I have to open my kit by the door and bring it back by my computer. And I don't enjoy working on the computer as much as from life. It's a very big difference. I really prefer live work, live drawing is what I like.
Yeah, and how does it work virtually? So do you, you're over Zoom or something?
Yeah, I get a link and I have to sketch on my computer, get dust all over the keyboard and everything. And that's how virtual works. Oh, I did the whole R. Kelly trial in an overflow room. I never was allowed to be present inside the courtroom. I had to go to court every day, sit in an overflow room and watch the proceedings on one of two large television monitors. And it was blurry and hard to see. And that was what I had to do. It was what I had to work with. I couldn't get in until the day of the verdict. They let me go inside the courtroom. But I had never been in the courtroom before that. It was pretty exciting to get in finally. It's a very different thing to work virtually than to work from life.
Yeah, I'm sure it makes it more difficult to develop an honest sketch, which is, you know, what you're
Correct.
Trying to do.
I had only one. My view was what the photographer gave me or what the camera gave me. It wasn't what I see looking around. So that's all I had to work with. And not only that, it's usually very blurry. So I can barely make features out. It's really a big struggle for me.
And I don't want to lose the lead on that. You just dropped in the nugget of being at the R. Kelly trial. What was it like getting that call?
That's the way. So I didn't just get a call out of nowhere and that this trial is coming. The arraignments are where I get those crazy calls. Go now. Somebody was arrested. The trial, everybody knows it's coming up. There's a date in place. Like I know Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels are coming to court. The trial will begin next week. I know that in advance. And, you know, that's scheduled months or even a year before, whatever. They do have a schedule. That's not one of those cold calls where I have to jump and run. And so that's how R. Kelly was. I knew I was going to have to be there. But in between R. Kelly and Ghislaine Maxwell, there was another trial, which was virtual, which was Derek Chauvin, the person who was found guilty of murdering George Floyd with the knee on the neck. And that was pretty gruesome. I did that one at home from my computer monitor, but I had to look at George Floyd being murdered over and over, and I had to really look. People usually look away or, you know, get squeamish, and which I felt in my gut, in my stomach, I was getting a little squeamish, but I had to really look. I had to draw that, so I couldn't look away. It was really hard for me because it was repeatedly shown all different angles of him with the knee, and the knee on the neck. I had to see his face and the life snuffed out of him, you know, from each minute of it and the moment his last breath was drawn. That was hard.
Sounds rough. And you had to do sketches of that video?
That's right. Every day, over and over. Same thing. Him being rolled over and put in an ambulance, every bit of that. Because that was what the trial showed. They kept showing videos because that's how they got him. With bystanders took videos from their cell phones and they kept repeatedly showing them. They were from different angles.
And how many sketches in a day do you do?
I'm going to say on a trial, full day when I'm, you know, what a full day of, it's very different when if it's an arraignment, I'll do probably just one sketch. But if it's a trial that goes the full day, I'm going to roughly say 6 to 8 in a day. You know, generally 7, 6, 7, 8. I don't know. It depends how many witnesses there are and how long the same witness is on the stand. If one witness is there all day, and sometimes they're there for a few days, that happens in some trials. If one witness is there, I'll do a wide shot. I'll do a close-up shot. I'll do a 2-shot, a 3-shot. You know, it depends what I've got to work with. But if they keep changing witnesses, that's when I'm just doing one head on a page. And then I have to quickly get my paper and do another head because it's another witness. So I may have more sketches, but they're less detailed. They're less people in the sketch.
And why do you do only the high profile cases?
Because I'm hired by the media. I'm not hired by the courthouse. I'm hired by the media and they don't want to pay me to go to court unless it's a story that they need to have sketches of because they're unable to get their cameras inside the courtroom. So that's why I'm sent.
And going back to the Chauvin trial and how you had to watch that over and over, that has to be traumatic on some level for you to see that over and over and over again. You're also a plein air painter in New York City. Does that help you deal with those moments to just get outside and paint something that's just as far removed from whatever you've seen 100 times that day?
Well, obviously, when I'm working on a trial, I have zero time left over in a day to draw anything. So paint, I haven't really been painting. And I have to tell you also, during pandemic in New York City, I have not been outdoors with an easel. I do not feel comfortable on the streets of the city putting up an easel and a canvas and not being aware of what's around me. Because there's a lot of emotionally disturbed people. There's a lot of crime, random crime. It's pretty different here in the city now. Homeless people, angry people. It's just not making me comfortable to go out there and focus on an easel. I have to keep my eyes open, my ears listen. I have to know what's going on around me at all moments, right? I'm outside, I'll go out, but it's not like I'm going to get lost in a canvas right now. That's how I feel.
That's a great answer. That's exactly the opposite of what I thought you were going to say, and I love that answer. Does seeing all of these trials and hearing about criminals and just being in that world, does that make you more aware of these external circumstances and, you know, just being, you know, aware of your surroundings at all times?
I think that I'm not the only one aware. I think people who read any tabloid, who looks at a headline of a tabloid or turns on the news for a second, is going to hear about the crime in New York City at the moment. It's not only New York City. It's a lot of places. It's just going on. It's a rough time now. So I don't think it's because I'm a courtroom artist that I'm more aware. I am aware when people are arrested and if there's a photo of them or if I'm going to end up having to go to court. I do pay attention to the news. For that reason, not, you know, and there is, I'm seeing too much crime in the papers. It's not just what I'm sent to court to cover. It's happening all around me.
And as far as your job is concerned, when you're doing sketches, it makes it easier. It's more something to grasp onto when the person is expressive in some way. I'm sure Stormy Daniels and Avenatti's trial will probably fit that in that folder. But was Ghislaine's like that as well?
Oh, she was very expressive. And that was great for me. She had a lot going on. I don't expect that to be happening in Avenatti. I've sketched him before. He just kind of sits there. He, as a lawyer, he was animated, but now he'll be a defendant. So he'll just, I don't expect a lot of, and he's not going to be hugging and kissing his lawyers, I'll tell you that. And Ghislaine Maxwell did offer me a lot of activity. She'd walk in the courtroom, immediately hug. She hugged everyone on her team one by one. Everybody got a hug, a kiss. She sat down. She'd turn around in her chair to face maybe her family or the audience to see what's going. She wasn't just sitting there quietly like a lump. No, Ghislaine did a lot.
And you said that you don't typically get starstruck, and that's understandable. But is there somebody out there that, if you ever had to sketch them, you'd be nervous doing it? Have you ever thought of that? Obviously, Tim and myself, you'd be very nervous sketching us.
There's nobody that's going to make me starstruck anymore. I mean, I'm just, it's been a long, 41, I don't know how many years, a lot, since 1980. I'm not going to be starstruck. I may be nervous, but I'm under pressure all the time. I'm nervous because of the stress of my job. And will I get a good seat? That's what I worry about the most. Will I be able to see? Because sometimes I can't. And I have to like have one split second. Somebody may turn. Oh, there it is. And then he's gone or she's gone. And I have to, that's what it's all about for me. Will I get the view? Will I be able to see something? There's a lot of equipment in courtrooms that blocks my view. They don't always put me in the front row like they used to. The Ghislaine Maxwell trial, except for that pretrial, during trial, I was in the third or fourth row back. There were a lot of heads blocking my view. It was very, very complicated and difficult. So that's what makes me nervous, the stress of getting the seat, getting set up. Once I'm all set up in my chair with my pastels laid out, I'll be okay if I know I'm going to have a view, but otherwise I'm going to worry and try to tap people on the shoulder. Can you just move an inch? You know, I'm going to hope to see through your head and your head. It's rough. that's what worries me.
What about outbursts? Would you have to sketch that? And I guess how could you, like, would that make it harder? Because it's obviously not a still life in front of you. It was a moment that happened.
But that's what makes my job exciting. An outburst is something. It's not just, people sitting still like lumps, which is a little boring. That's what I have to pay attention for. Of course, I'm going to have to sketch that. And as I said, I'm going to have to change whatever I'm working on and pull out a sheet of paper and start a fresh drawing. That happens to me often. And that's exciting. Actually, that's where the adrenaline gets flowing. And I love that. I'm needed to do something else. You know, I have to get that moment.
So God, cool. Stop being so professional.
Tim's so jealous. I have a really, it might seem like a throwaway question, but I'm really curious about this. Do you do anything with your hands to like keep them strong so you can, do you have like exercises that you do?
No, but I can tell you that because I dig in a box of pastels every day, my skin gets very dried out, especially during the winter months, and it cracks. And so for the past several years, I've been wearing finger cots, which are these latex things I have them mostly for my two fingers, my thumb and the next finger. But then the last year I've been wearing on the third finger because they just really dry up my skin. It's not good to dig in chalk all day long.
Interesting. Now, I'm curious if you think I have a future here, because I just sketched you. So just tell me if I have a future.
Let's
here.
See what you got. Well, that's pretty good. You got the glasses right?
Yeah. It's not too bad.
Too bad. You can get my job. Go ahead. Start
I'm so
going
jealous.
Forward.
He's never sketched me, Jane.
Well.
Oh, I just haven't shown you.
He will.
Well, this has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.